This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Early Work, our first ever transatlantic episode. I'm speaking to someone in New York City, baby. Which is why, if it sounds like I'm shouting more in this episode than others, it's so that she could hear me, of course. Plus, I was desperately trying to cover the sound of the electric saw that was being used directly outside my window that started up just seconds before this podcast recording began. Amy Hoggart was the guest. You may know Amy Hoggart from Almost Royal, in which her and Ed Gamble pretended to be members of the royal family. Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, and now her own show, It's Personal, which just went out, and you can still watch on True TV, maybe Amazon or iTunes if you're in America, which most likely you are not. She brought stories of public speaking contest shockers, school play demands that she made that did not pay off, egg costumes that she was in that were mocked, and fresh from the last episode, even more school-based arson. What is going on with these guests? Plus, of course, the work, a beautifully decorated novel, the word she didn't fully understand yet, cousin-based romance and lyrics for a boy band of short kings. It's baffling, it's vengeful, and it's all hilarious. So I hope you enjoy the early work of Amy Hoggart. Joining me this week on Early Work, our first guest, literally in a different continent right now. She is in the United States of America. It is Amy Hoggart. Hello, Amy. How are you?
Hi, Reese. How are you?
You know, getting through.
I forgot to say I'm well. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean...
You have to say I'm well and then you ask if I got it.
I just thought it was like different in America. Like, it's an American thing of a power play. It feels, you know, it's like a classic bro-y USA. Yeah. Never answer how you are. That's how to get the upper hand of business. Yeah. Art of the deal. That's what I thought. I don't know.
Don't tell people how you really are.
For listeners to this who don't know Amy, Amy is probably best known for when the TV director Tommy Forbes told me that Amy and Ed Gamble are the most talented people he has ever worked with, despite the fact he was currently working with me on a TV show.
That's crazy, because old Tommy Forbes, I always thought he didn't think I was good at all, because he always said cut whenever I started speaking during filming.
He does that.
He always was like, and that's enough, but never with Ed.
Oh, he said it's enough, though. So he was like, as soon as you started, he was like, we've got it. That's how talented you are.
Yeah.
Now, Amy, if I had to guess what you were like at school, and I do, because it's the first format point of the show, what I've written is, first of all, massive goody two-shoes. I've put that I think you always got your work done and you always got the best marks. I've said that I thought you were dotting around in your own little world for a while, floating around in a bubble full of smiles, all fairly innocent. But then, hang on, what's that little notebook she carries around with her that she writes in every 20 minutes? Is it a diary? Sort of. No, it's the list of enemies. Everyone who has ever wronged her. Then year 10 onwards, channeling that energy into debate club or something. And then school plays, lots of personal statement fodder, the most beautifully colourful revision folder you've ever seen. And maybe, and this is a long shot, when you were younger, very long hair. Is any of that correct?
I think absolutely every single bit is spot on, which is crazy because we don't really know each other at all.
No
way. But I realise you do know me now.
I've got a knack for this. I've got a good eye for this sort of
thing. But the detail. So we've got, yeah, it was a massive goody two shoes. Oh, you did get one thing wrong. It was a massive goody two shoes. Always got my work in, right? Did not do very well, though. Yeah. Like, I used to get high marks for effort and low marks for quality.
Oh, the worst way round. If you get low marks for effort but still smashing out the park, is the dream, the arrogant dream.
That wasn't for me.
Oh, trying so hard and getting nowhere.
Trying so hard. I never got anywhere. But I went to a grammar school, so I didn't really stand out as working hard. It was just like everybody did. But I was a teacher's pet. I liked to make a teacher smile. I was very smiley, and I did use colour for everything. I still do. Like, I have colour-coded. I have synesthesia, so I colour-code everything. Like, today is blue.
You must have explained this thousands of times. It must be boring to explain that.
No, no one cares.
But it means that... Well, I do. So it means that you just see colour in, like, songs and stuff as well, right? So a song is a certain colour.
Yes.
Does that mean that people are certain colours?
People aren't. I'm not a lunatic, but songs are. And I once, like, when we were in school, I guess I was under 11, I was in my primary school, and they taught us this song in French, and I remember sitting on the floor and freaking out that they were teaching us such a navy blue and black song, considering that we were just children. And I remember being like, when's it going to lighten, colour-wise? Like, I was having this insane experience in my head.
Also, as a child, at that age, did you think that everyone was like you? That everyone saw these colours?
Yeah, I didn't realise till quite recently that it was just me.
Stuff like, so, okay, that's mad. And did you have a book of enemies? Was that an accurate prediction?
I didn't have a book of enemies, but I think just because that didn't occur to me, like, I was quite revenge oriented.
Yes, yes. I don't know why I saw that in you. I mean, I don't know what it was that I just suddenly thought, oh, I bet she had an appetite for vengeance when she was a kid.
It was when I was younger. I think it was like, you know, hormones and insecurities. Mine made me very territorial over best friends. And I was quite, if you did something wrong, I would really stew on it and like bitch about you. And it wasn't until I got into sixth form we all settled and I felt comfortable that sort of fell away.
Wow.
But do not fuck with me now, Reese. Yeah. Honestly, because...
Well, Tommy Forbes, for example.
Oh,
Tommy Forbes.
You really...
Blacklisted.
Ooh, Tommy.
I'm pretty sure Tommy Forbes listens to this show, so...
Really?
I'm only saying that for his benefit, really.
Because I regret saying that he always cut me off, but he did. And he must die now.
Oh, actually, in that case, on this episode, he probably listened to the intro and then he just stopped. Oh, that's enough. Amy's nailed it with the hello. Goodbye. Yeah. I don't need to listen to this.
I'm like, oh, I don't have vengeance anymore. But in the intro, I start wanging on about this man who cut me off.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Over 5 years ago.
There's a live grudge and now you're denying that you care about that sort of stuff. What about debate club? Was there any equivalent to it? You went to a grammar school. Was there any debate club equivalent there?
Yeah. So
were you in it?
Yeah, yeah. it was public speaking. That's the same, right? And we also had a debate club. I was very political. So I was a communist. And I mean, I still am like very far to the left, but I'm not like, hey, I'm a communist. Like at school I did. And I used to have this friend called Steph. And she's now an investment banker and she was always very right wing and we used to debate. But she also did economics and was much more intelligent than me. So it was just me like screaming my head off about like listening to the masses and like how we're all at one and like there shouldn't be wealth. And she was just like took me down really, really well in like one sentence. And then I got upset about it.
That's so fascinating because you are now well known for being a multimillionaire. Who hates charity?
Famous multimillionaire.
That's what I've just said in the intro. That you're not part of the main intro. When I intro, you'll say, "Very honoured to have famous multimillionaire Amy Hoggart on the podcast today to really get some financial insight from her all the way from America." She created several apps. It surprises me that your friend. I was going to say when you said you were a communist at school, I was like, I think everyone is at school because they think that's what you're meant to say. So when I was at school, I've talked about it on this podcast before, but when I was at school, I used to make so much like what I thought was like Banksy style political propaganda where I would draw Like, I did one. Eventually, I'll post it on the internet, but I'm too embarrassed at the moment, where it was, like, a shirt and tie and a neck that just, like, cuts off. And then around this shirt and tie. And so it's like a man, but like just where his head would be and everything surrounding the shirt and tie, it just says irrelevant, 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 irrelevant. And then at the bottom, oh at the bottom, it says capitalism. And I made that when I was like 16. And I was like, I'm a genius. Wow. I mean, this should be on T-shirts. And then I was like, well, hang on, you can't sell it. You can't make this and make money from it, you idiot.
Yes.
Which is what I wanted to do.
You've got to give it out to people at factories.
Yeah, yeah.
You could get factory workers to make it and then give it to them for free and not let their bosses have one.
Yeah, it still feels weird getting factory workers to make it. Still feels a bit outsourced and that's not ethical, surely.
Get their bosses to make it.
Ooh.
The bosses make it and then the workers own it.
Jeff Bezos has to make these T-shirts and everyone who works at Amazon has to wear them. Oh, we've just solved it. We've just solved it. We've done it. So you were a big old communist who held a grudge and loved getting acknowledged. So you're a communist who loves getting acknowledged by teachers. To me, there's power structures there that don't make sense.
No, I didn't need to be the best. I needed to be liked. Because I was also extremely annoying, and I was definitely the type of kid that the teacher wouldn't like as well. So it was important to me to like balance that out.
Right. Okay.
If that
and
makes
when,
sense.
Yeah. 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 Sure. And when you're doing public speaking, these public speaking things, were you?
Yeah.
Were you doing them? So you're obviously competing against your friend Steph, having like debates, political debates. But are you going outside of school to do public speaking that you've like practiced in school?
Yeah, we used to.
Or was
do,
it just within the school?
We did it within the school, and then outside of the school, we were a team. So Steph and I and this friend of ours called Georgia, and she'd be the main speaker, and I was the vote of thanks. And then Steph was like the intro person, and we go to like a rotary thing. And then one day, we won like second runner up, but Steph went up to get the main prize by accident. And I've never been so embarrassed in my life. I thought I was going to die.
Typical capitalist move. What a capitalist move that is.
Super capitalist. It was like humiliating for our whole school. Like we were so ashamed.
Oh, that's great. She just walks up there with a blank check and says, how much do you want for top prize?
Basically, yeah.
Classic Steph. That's so it just purely accidentally, right? She just
I can't remember the ins and outs of it, but they were like, just someone come up and then she came up, but they were like giving the first prize away and they were like, not from your school. And we were like,
oh, no.
Oh shit. I feel it in my tummy.
Do you remember at all what your speech was about?
Oh, well, no, because I was just afraid to thank. So Georgia did her speech, but this is the topic. Different generations, like the idea of generations in general, which is not a debate. But she's just talking about how different generations are different. And then I went on and thanked her.
So your job is to just go, thanks.
No, it'd be like round of applause. I think it was just like round of applause for Georgia. And this is like how great her speech was. But I did mine really ironically because I thought that was funny. I was like talking about how it was the best speech in the world. And I was kind of trolling her. So that's why one of the reasons that we didn't win.
Yeah, and then.
But I got.
To do that, where you say this is the best speech of all time, and then for Steph to go up and claim the award at the end as if she had won it, it's like you planned the whole thing and it was all some prank TV program.
But then, this is the thing, is I then got an award in school for being the best vote of thanks. And what you need to understand is I was in the first year, which is unheard of for anybody to win an award so young. So I still hold this as like my best moment of my life because I felt like Gwyneth Paltrow at the Oscars. And because I was so insecure and I had bad posture, I walked up to the front like hunchback, like bent over up on like a right angle because I was so shy. And then I like hugged the stage and I looked at my feet while I was like bent down and I didn't even say thank you for the award. I just ran off stage.
Oh my God.
It was so like, I'll never feel like this
And you
again.
Were getting an award for saying thank you. You get an award as the person. This person famously gives the best thank yous in the business. Do you have any, Amy, do you have anything to say? No. Goodbye.
Ran away. And then my mum took me to see a physio because it was so bad. My back was just, because I just didn't want to be seen.
It's so difficult for me not to say that was the straw that broke the camel's back right now. because that is exactly... I did say it. I mean, that's my way around. That's my ironic vote of thanks.
But you said it.
That's me. That's how to do a terrible pun, is just say, I'm not going to say this pun while you're saying it.
I don't think you should make a joke about that because I had a bad back and I had to wear insoles and everyone took the piss for me because they measured my leg length from my belly button, which is not in the middle, and they said one of my legs was... So I had to wear a really high shoe.
Do you wear a built-up shoe at school?
What it was like such a high insole, I don't know why I did that visually, that my foot was like coming out the top of the shoe.
Oh my god, I can see why you've had to turn to writing.
And I wore glasses that didn't have lens, they were just glass, because the opticians just gave me them.
What are you talking about? What, everything you're saying is absolutely insane. The optician just gave you some glass.
I was getting headaches from reading, and my mum was like, maybe you need your eyes checked, because everyone on my dad's side of the family is blind or have glaucoma or whatever. So we went down and they were like, I think your eyes are fine. And I was like, I'm getting these headaches, it's really bad. And maybe I was just like pushy, or my mum was, but I don't think we are anyway. They were like, fine, we'll give you them. And the prescription was like minus point something 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 in one eye. And then I went into school with this really cool, like, kaleidoscope, this glasses case with my new glasses, and I tried them on. Like,
this is just hard. You can't let people try them on when you're wearing trick glasses.
I know.
That is...
I thought they were real, and I was like, they make a huge difference.
Did you stop getting headaches?
No.
Oh, there you go. Did you do... Am I right about school plays? Did you do any school plays?
Big time. Yeah. And you know what? I had a coffee with my drama teacher like a year ago, because she came to New York and she was really moved to see that I was still in the, like, doing drama or whatever. And she was really like moved that I was still doing it. And I was shocked because I never got like a big part. I was always this small comedy role. So my final play, I was Humpty Dumpty, and I was basically this like huge egg. And there's a man, and I remember like going out and being like getting so many like people really liked it. I felt really good, but I also was doing it to like all the boys from the boys' school, and I remember coming on as this egg, and then Nick Overton saying in the front row, he went, "Oi, everyone, look at Amy Hawker." I was like, "Why? I look so..." This is my moment. And then I looked insane. And then, because I made myself legs, like prosthetic legs out of tights that I stuffed, and I had white like face paint.
Wait.
And my boyfriend at the time wouldn't look like he wouldn't hang out with
so,
me.
So wait, your costume as the egg was face paint,
yeah,
stuffed tights. There must have been something else like, to make it egg-like.
Yeah, I think I wore an egg structure and I had my face paint like through... poking through, it was white. I know I looked...
So your face was in the middle of the egg?
Yeah, like near the top, like the yolk.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And then I had these like legs hanging down, and one of the bigger girls, Sarah, carried me on her shoulders and like lowered me onto the wall. I was quite lazy, and I remember doing one of the dress rehearsals, I had white face paint on, and I was like, oh, Will, my boyfriend, needs to get used to me with my face paint, and I just couldn't be bothered to take it off. So I went around his house, and his brother was there with all his friends from uni, and I had like white face paint for no reason, and mix your teeth really yellow, and then Will asked me to go and wash it all off.
Oh my, yeah, I mean,
so it was like a bad time, but I was like, my confidence wasn't knocked. I knew that I had something special.
You were you can't turn in an egg performance like you did and not know. This is it.
Yeah.
This is the future. Better get confident giving my victory speeches. We're not having a repeat of last time, because I'm going to be collecting awards. Did you have to fall off the wall as Humpty Dumpty?
I think so. I can't really remember. I just remember... I remember my booming voice. And I was also... This is so weird, but I was obsessed with playing men, and I just like found men much funnier. And I remember the same, like when you transition from GCSE to A level for drama, I don't know, this must have changed now that we know that gender's fluid, that you couldn't play the opposite sex after you were when you're doing A-levels. So I went into a panic that I was going to never play a man again. So the teacher was like, this is your last opportunity to ever play a man, and no one gave a shit, but I cared so much. So we had to find this play that was all women and one man for me. I was so committed that, because I also played a schoolgirl and I had to transition my costume, I basically like went on stage and I didn't pull my trousers up because I ran out of time. So I went on stage with my trousers down, and then I still sat with my legs apart because that's how men sit. And so I was just like, it was, and then everyone was really upset afterwards. Like, it was this whole thing that I had insisted on. Didn't pull my trousers up. Sat with my legs apart. And then, so to be playing a man again, even if it was an egg, was a really nice thing.
I cannot, I mean, I can't get my head around. I can't believe you told me that my school predictions were accurate when the character you're actually presenting to me that you were at school is one of the most unique things I've ever heard about in my life. I mean, so you insist, you demand, I will be playing a man, thank you, in this play that's all women, one man, but not just a man. I will play a schoolgirl as well. And then when it comes time to change and I play the only man in this play, I will use it as an opportunity to all but expose myself in the school environment. And let's see how you deal with that one, Board of Governors. Good luck. Good luck explaining this to the PTA.
But it's also... Because I was wearing a skirt and then I pulled for Peggy, the girl. And then for Dr. Joseph Carden, I'd pull my trousers underneath and put a lab coat on so you didn't see the skirt. But in a panic, I didn't have time to pull my trousers up. So I pulled... Because I was like, I can't miss a cue. Because I think they were going, oh, it's Dr. Joseph. Mm. Like, oh, Dr. Joseph's here. And I was like backstage. So I shuffled on with them like round my knees.
I would argue is that my number one priority would be trousers up. Given that you have to walk. I mean, how are you not going, okay, the first thing I'll do is pull my trousers up. Then we'll talk about lab coats and hiding a skirt. You've gone, well, no, he's a doctor. Every doctor you've ever seen has been wearing a lab coat. Some doctors have had their trousers around their ankles. It's just the way of the world. That's what getting a PhD is all about. Did you write any skits or anything that you performed at school? Is there anything you came up with that you were like, I need the world to see this? Or were you just writing privately?
No, I did do some plays. I wrote, I wrote one that was the Christmas play. Every year the prefects or the sixth formers or whatever would do a Christmas play, and I wrote one, and it's so easy to say now that it was the best thing anyone's ever written, but it was never performed because right before Christmas the school burned down and
what is going on?
And weirdly, I was having my hair and makeup done. This is so insane. In New York. That sounds glamorous, but this was like... I can't say that without sounding like a dick. But anyway, and the hair and makeup when I did English accent. And I was like, where are you from? London, blah, blah, blah. South East. She went to my school, but like older. And she was like, whoa, it burnt down. And I was like, yeah, I went to watch it burn. And she was like, holy shit. And we're having this chat. And she was like, I can't believe you got to watch it burn. And it was like a big thing. Like it was... I couldn't believe that I was still talking about that.
Just to say, now you told me that you weren't the sort of person who had an enemy book or a grudge.
Oh, shit.
And yet, after being laughed at for dressing like an egg, you went and watched your school burn. I mean, I'm just putting two and two together here.
You're nearly right, but the thing is that I was such a goody two shoes. I would have burnt a human down, but not a school.
Okay, well, there you go. There's our intro.
Let's leave it that. I also did cry, but I was crying. So my friend Sophie called and was like, the school's on fire. Do you want to go? My mum's going to drive us down to watch it burn if you want. I said, sure. So we drove over. We were watching it burn. Like, we were all standing on the other side of the road. And I just picked up that it was appropriate to cry. So I did. But I was crying for my work as well. I was like, we're never going to do the sixth form entertainment, and we didn't.
I mean, Amy, look, it's very, it would be very easy for me to call you a psychopath now, but
you can. It's not the first time someone's mentioned that.
I really want to, but I just thinking about it, this is exactly how I'd have reacted to that.
Really?
I'd have been like, but this, okay, I'd have looked around and gone, everyone's crying, so you have to cry, and the main victim of this is me. That is how I'd have responded. Why did it burn down? What happened?
It's crazy. So, like, a few weeks before, they'd had a meeting, apparently, about how if there was any electrical fault in the roof, there were no firewalls, so it would spread and then everything would burn. So they were like, we've got to sort that out. And then it just happened almost immediately after. And it was weird because it was like a week after the school Christmas play. And so kids would have, like, loads of people would have been in the school at the time, like a week before. So it was good timing in that no one was there. But it was bad timing in that it happened in the first place, because it's so insane.
It sounds more and more suspicious by the second. What it sounds like to me, yeah, is that someone said, of course, that someone said, oh, do you know that because of the way this is built, if a fire starts up there, it will burn down the whole school. And someone went, okay, I'll bear that in mind for when no one will die. And then an insurance scam happened where they wanted to get all the money for the school.
Oh my God. It totally might be the case, because then students got massive extensions. Like, we got huge extension on our deadlines. And we also, they like rebuilt the thing. It looks like a spaceship now.
I mean, this is a scam. Come on. Yeah. We've just exposed it. This is a ridiculous insurance scam. Can I just say, you're not going to believe this. This is the second consecutive early work episode where the guest school burnt down.
No way. What was the other guest? Where did they go?
The previous guest, Danny Wallace's school burnt down. It can't have been the same place, because it would have been.
Also, mine was girls' school, but you guessed that from my personality.
It would have been Danny Wallace is a different generation, crucially.
Just it's to, all about just generations.
Just to bring it all back around. But you could say that about anything. If you talk about any subject, you could say, well, it's all different generations, I suppose. So what sort of stuff were you writing that you want to talk about today? Like, what did you bring? I know you said to me before, what is it, a novel?
Yeah.
Okay. Just very certain. Yep, a novel. Take it seriously, Reese.
So I don't think I have as good stuff as other people, because it's all at my mum's house and we don't see each other on account of pandemics and stuff. So I didn't know what she was going to send me, but she found my first novel, which I'd forgotten.
Now, when you say first novel, it implies several other novels. Did you write a lot of novels?
Yeah, I've always been dappling with the novel. One of my favourite novelists was first published at 70. So I do always think, like, oh, I will one day get published, but it might not be for, like, decades. But I was always writing them, because this is... because, you know, I have had vengeance fantasies. One of my earliest forms of revenge was when someone in my family would wrong me, I would go up to my room and I would write a story about them out loud, but very loudly. My mom told me, she's like, I can hear your stories. And it was brutal every time.
So is that because you'd seen in films that when people write, for the benefit of the audience in films, when people write, they have to say, dear diary, today I, and they say it out loud so that we can hear. And it's often not even a voiceover. Were you doing it because of that? You were like, or was it just because you wanted them to hear you? So you could go, today, mum, stole my last piece of chocolate or whatever angry about.
I had diary entries like that. Like, I remember my first ever diary was me talking about my second cousin Georgia, who came round and got my Barbies out but didn't put them back. And I remember being like, dear diary, Georgia is horrible, and her mum got like didn't even make her clear up. So it was like pages and pages about this. But this was like a more sophisticated development, because I was writing fiction out loud. So I'd be like, once there was a nice, perfect little girl called Amy, but she had a horrible witch of a mother. But I never knew. I was really surprised when she told me she could hear it. So she was just downstairs and listening to this stuff for just so long. But I think my dad encouraged it, because he was always like helping me we used to make stories and make books together, and we wrote a whole story about a family who lived in a treacle well, for instance. And then she sent me this, which was, like, it's a whole book. She sent me photos of it, of the book. The title is Piano Propaganda by Amy Holgate. And I can
tell you... How old were you when you wrote this?
I was 10, because it says on the back, it's got a little bio. It says, Amy Hoggart is a 10-year-old writer who lives in St. Margaret's with her family, who enjoys writing, reading and sticker collecting. And then there's a photo of me, sorry, a drawing of me, but it's so good, it looks like a photo. But I've rubbed loads of my features out, so I just have eyes and one eyebrow. And it also, I know it's, it has an inscription. It's 1996, if anyone wants to know my age.
Piano Propaganda, 1996, novel with a front cover and an author. I mean, it's all quite precocious for a 10-year-old.
Unbelievably. It's also, it's dedicated. It says, this book is dedicated to my loving mother.
Okay, so...
1996.
So it wasn't one of the times where you were furious with your mum writing an angry story about her.
No.
This is where you thought she was loving.
It was up and down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She was a loving mother. And you dedicated Piano Propaganda to her.
Also, I remember the title because I was really into alliteration and I knew it was about the piano, but I needed another word that began with peace. And I don't know how I found the word propaganda, but I had to learn the meaning and realised it was irrelevant. So I sort of changed the meaning in my mind, which is not how words work.
No. I was going to say propaganda. That is that a word that a 10-year-old knows? But I mean, you have clarified no.
No,
a 10-year-old doesn't know that word.
not this 10-year-old, no.
Just found out that it exists. Okay, so do you have any extracts of Piano Propaganda that we can hear?
I also should say for the viewer who wants to consume this book, the listener like who wants to consume this book like they would a normal book, there is a blurb so you can see if you like it. And a publishing company, Amy Books, and a USBN. And a zip, like a barcode, and a price, $2.50.
Oh, that's quite cheap.
The blurb is, when Michael's weird Uncle Beagle Wax would be a weird name. When Michael's weird Uncle Beagle Wax comes to take him to Barbados to play in a famous concert, Michael is the time of his life. But soon Michael starts to wonder, will he ever go home?
So the jeopardy is... He's had a great time. But you know what? You know what I miss? My own bed. It's just a holiday. You've written a story about a holiday.
I also gave myself some quotes. What, some recommendations? What are they called?
Oh, yeah. Little review quotes on the book.
Review quotes. they're almost exactly the same. The first is an exhilarating story by Mrs. Brocklesby, brackets, Amy's encouraging teacher. Suck up.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And then the second one is a very exciting story by Amy Sullivan, who is my friend, but it's a different spelling of Amy.
Did you show your teacher the book?
Yeah, big time. She'd have seen that. This fall for her.
And she'd have seen that you attributed a quote to her that she hadn't necessarily said. Or had she said it? Or is the point that she did say it?
I can't remember that.
I would wager, based on everything else you've told me, she did not say that. And you handed it to her, and then you didn't blink the whole time she read it. And then you sort of went, yeah? And then she went, yep, good.
Okay,
very
yes.
Good. Put the matches down.
I'd gone like, do I need to cross out the review?
Yeah. Like, while holding a knife.
Piano Propaganda, Chapter 1. Michael wandered into the concert hall. It was huge. The audience's seats seemed to stretch out further and further away, till all you could see was a thin black dot. The stage was large and circular, with pale yellow smooth floors, which had been polished daily. In the centre of the floor was the grand piano, huge black and shiny, with silken black and white keys. Spotlights hung down over the stage, glassy, bright yellow slates were slotted in front of them. An arch, which was beautifully hand-carved and painted, hung above the stage. A rose was carved in the centre with an angel on either side. The angel's wings were attached to rose vines, which crept down the arch to the bottom. The main part of the stage that caught the audience's eye was the rich, deep blue curtains that fell down from the sky and bit by bit tumbled down to the floor. They made the stage sense a deep blue misty feeling which hid the dusty... Still talking about the stage. which hid the dusty wooden frame that held the stage together. Together with the sound of the orchestra practicing, the faint dusty smell of the rosin, it was a welcoming and happy place to be. As he gazed around the room, Michael felt petrified. That's it, chapter one.
I like it. That's a really good reveal at the end. It's actually got a twist. I've never known a scene set to such an extent as that. I mean, there's nothing I can't picture there. You've clearly, into colour because every colour is mentioned. They're so colourful. It's yellow, it's blue, there's a thin black dot. But also, like, there's detail in there that, like, I can't believe a 10-year-old would notice, like, hand-carved arch, rose vines on an angel's wings. Like, this is top level. This is like a 60-year-old's novel.
It's top level. You've said it in what?
And then the twist, it's this beautiful, grand concert hall. It's incredible. It's a happy place to be.
Yeah.
As he stood there, he felt petrified.
It's much better than anyone would have imagined.
It's fucking great. I mean, that's a joke. There's a joke in it. And it's like, it's basically, despite all this, he still didn't really want to be there.
I will say, for a whole chapter, you don't know what the novel is about. At this point, it's about set deck.
It's certainly not a chapter. I wouldn't call it a chapter. It's notes.
I don't know what it's about. It's a series of notes.
It's notes for production.
Yeah, it's production notes. It is.
You've written production notes, age 10. But then finally we get a character at the end of chapter one. We get a character. He's scared. And there's a piano there. All we know about is there's a grand piano in this massive auditorium. So presumably he's going to play the piano. It's called Piano Propaganda. So we're expecting the piano to get played. So chapter two, presumably he goes into, and then he plays the piano. That's what we get to.
There's also rosin. I think I've written rosin, but I thought it was, which is what you put on your on your bow.
Okay.
This 10-year-old played the cello. That's the point. So,
right.
Some people would know there's some other instruments. Maybe they'll feature them.
Right. Oh, and they're hinted at. Okay, but I don't know anything. I'm too thick to know about.
You're too thick. And also might not get picked up later because, as I say, I haven't read this for decades, sadly.
It'd be typical for you to just drop that in there and then just go, nothing. I have enough to do with that from now on. That's right.
It.
I introduced that. I mean, this character who's about to play the piano is no longer in it, what a baller move. Build a whole chapter introducing this character. All right, now we'll move on.
Never comes back. There is a picture of a character coming up. The next page has a drawing, so I'm quite excited by that.
Okay, let's go.
Chapter two, Michael was a pianist with wavy beige hair, which stuck to his face like a swimming cap. His grey hazel eyes looked mysterious, as if he had a deep, dark secret hidden in them. His mouth was small, pink and puckered up, and capitals, never smiled. I've used Tippex here. My of guest, I think.
Mm.
He was not loyal to his friends.
I would not have guessed that. I mean, there's no reason for me to guess that. I understand he dedicated his life to music, but I never would have gone, oh, well, there's someone who's not loyal to his friends. I mean, there's loads of people who dedicate their lives to music. I don't think, oh, I've probably got no mates though. Whenever I'm listening to an album I like, I don't think, this prick doesn't have any friends.
Backstabber. But I think you're going to find that the author's taking it into a new direction in the middle of the sentence.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
As you might have guessed, he was not loyal to his friends, for he did not have any, and never had.
Well, that is even more confusing. So how does he know? If he's never had friends, there's no one to be disloyal to. It doesn't...
Like...
Oh, my God.
All you know is his hair looks like a blonde swimming cap.
Which I absolutely can't imagine. No image comes to mind when I hear that. I can't possibly picture...
It's also just... Clearly, I was having, like, swimming lessons and stuff. Like, it was all...
Yeah, just bringing together everything from your world at the time.
Basically, yeah. It all started one sunny, warm summer's morning. ... Michael was playing a piano piece a few staves into the piece. I don't even know what that means anymore. Michael heard the doorbell ring. He slowly rose and went to answer it. As he approached the door, a ray of light shone through the glass, nearly blinding him. The light darkened, leaving Michael's sight blurry. He struggled to open the door. A mass of bright colours stood in front of him. Slowly his eyes peeled open more and the colours started to form into a weird-looking man. Weird. Mm. We've got a drawing of this guy coming up, which I'm really excited by. Michael stared. The man was dressed in fluorescent cycling shorts, red, yellow, green and blue patchwork tights, a silk pink vest. He was holding a torch and on his head was a helicopter hat. You know, one of those spinning ones?
Of course.
That's, to me, like, the funniest thing ever at the time.
And still is, honestly. Yeah.
Well, hello, the weird man chuckled. Are you Master Michael King? Yes, Michael answered tiredly.
what you've done is a classic. It's a quite filmic, this. So chapter one starts in a concert hall.
Yeah.
And chapter two, now we're in a flash.
It all started one summer.
We're a flashback.
Yeah, this is a flashback.
All started one summer, and this is him trying to go to his door in his house.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
For the first time ever, he's blinded by the light. Is he blinded by the colour of this guy's outfit?
I don't know. I'm guessing, yeah.
Because if not, you'd think, if you're living in a house where every time you go to the front door, you're blinded by sunlight, you'd think, I'm going to do something about this.
Got to get a new house.
Yeah, or a new door. At the very least,
yeah,
a new door. Or just maybe not a glass door for your front door. It seems...
It's so
seems
weird.
A bit dangerous.
He has to open the door and then peel his eyes.
Yeah, every time the postman can't fit a package through the letterbox.
I'm your Uncle Beaglewax. Michael gasped. He never knew that he had an uncle. Slowly, he showed his uncle into the sitting room where his mum was knitting. She too gasped, and together they burst into loud conversation. Michael silently left them. Michael is a freak. Chapter 3. By dinner time, they had stopped talking, and at the table they seemed to be all smiles. Michael's mother cleared her throat and introduced her brother to Mr. King, Chloe and Carlos. Not sure.
Carlos.
The local greengrocer is called Carlos.
And you, anyway. Chloe and Carlos, so you're keeping up your alliteration.
Sure, Carlos. Yep. When everyone knew Uncle Beaglewax, she explained the purpose of his visit. ... So you see, Michael. Oh, that was that was start of speech and then all those dots. And then the end is, so you see, Michael.
Sure.
And she paused. We're sending you to play in a world-famous concert in Barbados.
Ah, got it. And we know what the concert hall looks like.
Right. Oh, yeah.
When you said they burst into and then you left a dramatic pause, I thought, given your previous, this is surely going to be flames. And then it turned out it was loud conversation. So this uncle, who, by the way, is dressed quite threateningly, quite unacceptably for a stranger uncle arriving in your house, he's fitting a description. And then he walks into this room. I'm your uncle. Little pause, and then suddenly, at the same time, loud conversation. We're now having a loud conversation. And I get what the image you're trying to do, which is these two, like, old friends catching up, being like, gah!
Oh, relatives.
Relatives, yeah, of course. But people who've, like, forgotten each other or whatever. And now he's just saying, and we don't know why, we get to the end of the chapter, he's just saying, I want you to come and do a gig. I'm going to book you for a gig. Yeah. I'm your agent now, and I'm going to book you for a gig in Barbados.
And I've omitted all the backstory, so it's just speech marks, ... all the backstory. So you see, Michael, the author is not letting the reader know all of that.
Yeah, we're really having to piece things together.
Chapter 4. And that was how Michael got to the concert hall. A mellow voice greeted them in, and the manager led them to the piano where Michael practiced. By 6 p.m, and I did the digital, I wrote 6.00 as digital letters.
Right.
By 6 p.m, a few people had arrived, and by 6:15, all the audience's seats were filled up. Full up. Michael was hustled backstage while the orchestra played. His heart started beating so loudly that Michael thought the audience would hear it. Finally, he was taken onto the stage where he was applauded. He played on and on and on. So many dots then. Then it was over. He was going home. Or was he? And I've drawn a full piano from an aerial view, but I've drawn Michael from, looking on. So it's a perspective mess up, but I suspect that I just didn't have the ability to...
It's like an M.C. Escher thing. You're trying to do it kind of illusion. So is that the end? Is that the end that he... Or was he? Or is there another...
No. Oh, now we've got... Which is really creative is we've got a postcard, which I've decorated with another border that's just quite jazzy. 25th of July, 1996, Barbados. Dear Mum, Dad, Chloe and Carlos, how are you? I'm fine. The concert was nice and happy. And it's cute because I forgot to put was on, so I did that little thing where...
The little arrow.
was nice and happy. Today we went to the cinema. I spelled it wrong and then crossed it out and put an E in. In a limousine! Capitals. Uncle Beaglewax says that since I'm a genius, I should be treated like one.
There you are. Now I see you. Now I see you in that piece of writing. That's what it was all about. That's why you handed it to your teacher. Miss, read the line on page 6, if you wouldn't mind, on the postcard.
This is always getting
also me. The mystique around limousines before you go in one, because I remember being a kid, the idea of a limousine, it just felt like the most glamorous thing in the world.
Wow.
Then you go in a limo and it's maybe the worst experience it's possible to have. It's so boring.
When have you been in a limo?
Whoa, what's this kind of accusation? How dare you? When have you been? I'm looking at you. You don't look like someone who's been in a limo.
What a weird butt. One of you.
I'm very insulted by that. But I just love it. I love that kids think that limos, like you've written in this,
geniuses.
Kids think that limos are so cool. And yeah, you deserve to be treated like a genius. So now you're in a limo. Oh God.
My gosh. In the hotel, I have my own suite with a shower. There's a word. So my mum's not. She sent me images of it, but I've cut a word off beginning with T.
What's the sentence?
With a shower, something with tea, radio. I hope it's not toilet, but it could be. I've got shower, something, radio, minibar, triple bed.
She's invented the triple bed. I mean, well, it makes it logical sense.
Yeah.
Just add another one on there. What are you talking about? What are you doing?
Just a double. Not for me.
Triple, please.
I'm going to need a triple bed. Triple bed and mints on my pillow every night. And outside, there's a swimming pool, jacuzzi, and cocktail bar. Miss you, loads of dots. Love, Michael, kiss, kiss, kiss. Hug, hug, hug.
Okay, making him jealous.
I think we're on the last page now.
Good,
I think this is the last
page. I'm fascinated.
Page. Good,
I'm fascinated to know how it concludes. I'm on the edge of my seat here.
Oh, this is just, wow, I'm so amazing. Oh, wait, this is so multimedia. I can't wrap my mind around it. We've got a collection of media. So we've got a post. We'll begin with the postcard. It's stamped. There's a picture of the Queen on it. I've drawn Mr. King and family, and then I've done lines to indicate the address, but I blurred it basically, and then I've written my own postcode.
Keep them guessing.
28th of July 1996. Dear everyone, how are you? I'm fine. Today I had an interview with the press. I'm going to be in the Barbados Times next Monday. The headline is Piano Genius. Love you, Michael. Underlined, kiss, kiss, zero, hug, hug. And then we've got their article. Piano Genius by George Benton. Michael King, a 10-year-old pianist from England, played the Barbados Concert Hall on the 25th. His uncle claimed that he's a genius. Quote, he's been taking lessons for 7 years now, he said proudly, which meant since he was 3. 31st of September. How are you? I'm fine, crossed out. Okay, crossed out. I don't know.
Oh,
wow.
What? I don't know. I just feel misunderstood out here.
Oh, 4th of October. Dear Michael. Oh my God, I don't think my mum sent me all the pages of the book. I think this is the end.
This is classic of the book. This is the book intentionally misleads you and removes information. So this is perfect.
I'm just seeing pages at the end. So we're going to have to ask the viewers to buy it. This listeners to buy it. 4th of October. Dear Michael, happy birthday. How are you? We all miss you. See you soon, Mum. Oh, no, what I've done is I've done their own signatures. So in different handwriting. Mum, Dad. Looks like he can't write. Carlos and Chloe. P.S. We think you should go to the beach Monday in 2 weeks.
I like it. I mean, we think you should go to the beach. What if he just goes, oh, nah, I'm busy.
Right. Then he might never see his family again.
Do you remember what happens? He presumably goes to the beach and then everything's fine.
I don't know. This is really killing me. I suspect, knowing me, that it would be a story about, like, family. Like, he misses family so much, so maybe they moved to Barbados. And I had been to Barbados because my dad had this cool gig where he like wrote about some holiday there and like he got like a free holiday. But I was a baby. But I must have seen the photos and been like, that looks really nice.
This is, I mean, Michael King, there's no denying, is you. Michael King says, he says, how are you, in the same way you do at the start of this podcast. How are you? Oh, sorry, I'm fine. He
that was a weird
because... has secrets in his eyes.
Yep.
We all know there's something going on. He plays the piano and he sees everything in colour. Clearly he is you. You miss your family. You write about your family. Mm-hmm. Which leaves me one question. Do you have an insane uncle? Oh, we'll cut there if you want. We don't have to answer.
I have four uncles, Reese. I think Uncle Beaglewax is like my imagination just, you know, on fire.
Yeah.
For me, he's quite Dickensian, honestly.
Okay. Well. I can't escape Mr. Motivator in my head. So I mean, I would say I would describe Mr. Motivator as perhaps the least Dickensian character of all time. So that's the end of your novel. I mean, I do have to score your work eventually. Just before I do, is there any other work you want to present to me before we get to the scores?
Two things, very small. One is that I used to write a lot of plays, and I once did what I realise now is a highly sexual play with my cousin. Like, all my cousins, we got together and we were on holiday, and we did this play where I played a grown woman. I would have been about 11. A grown woman working out if I was going to be attracted to my cousin, Jamie. So, who's the same age as me. So every time he wanted to attract me, he would spray Gillette around, the best a man can get. Or maybe I spray Gillette on me, a best man can get, to sexually attract Jamie. And then when I wanted to get rid of him, I'd spray Buzz Off. And that was like our holiday play for our parents.
But you would... Okay, well, several questions. What did you think Gillette was? Because Gillette is razors and shaving foam. So you would spray...
For me, it was a spray.
It was like an aftershave. But you so in this, you spray, your parents watching you say, and then I sprayed Gillette, must have been like, sorry, you cover yourself in shaving foam to attract your cousin to you, and then you spray Buzz Off. What's that, an insect repellent?
Yeah,
if you want
to repel him if I went off him.
And you performed this and Jamie was willing to perform this as well.
Yeah, he's in the army now.
Of course, the one place that you can't get him. He's had to learn to defend himself.
Out my reach.
Well, okay, I'm glad you told me about that one, because that definitely impacts at least one of the categories that I'm going to score you on. That'll become clear. And you said there was another thing?
There's one more thing, is that so my mum was always trying to get me and my brother to be musicals, so we had like loads of lessons and stuff. But I can't sing, as you're about to hear maybe. But me and my friend Kate formed a band, and we didn't have a name. We just had one song called Candyland. I only remember a bit of it. But we got so we both have brothers the same age, my brother Rich and her brother Paul. And we all, the four of us, had a joint obsession with the band 911. I don't know if you're going to remember that.
I remember 911, yeah.
And I fancied Lee. And I also used to fancy Lee from Blue. So for a while, if anyone asked me if I had a type, it was... boys in boy bands called Lee. And we used to, the four of us had this obsession with 911, and we would dress like them and learn all their dances and songs. 911, interestingly, were matched just because they were all really short, which is appropriate for kids. Like, I think we saw ourselves in their stature, or
it, specifically in their clothes when you looked in the mirror.
In their eyes. Yeah. Anyway, so they were our backing dancers, and we used to get them to do it because I also like would get my brother to do everything. We had a radio show called Hoggart Happy Hour as well, where I would MC and he would DJ, but he would just play all the demos on our Yamaha keyboard. and then occasionally I would take the mic and sing Candyland with Kate.
We don't have to sing it, but can we have the key lyrics?
I'll tell you the lyrics. Chocolate covered toffees, candy canes too, we want to go to Candyland and so do you. Cream-filled something, I can't remember. Chocolate sponge cake. Mix it all together and eat what you make. And because Kate and Paul were actually American, so we used to sing it in American accents. And then I would write all the lyrics out and, like, draw these borders and, like, illustrations and laminate, like, cover it and stick it back plastic and give it out.
Now, the the candy-based song genre is perhaps the most sexualized song genre of all time. And I was willing to give you the benefit of the doubt until you said cream-filled something. I'm not sure what. I was like, are you, I mean, oh, yeah. Come on. I want to go to Candyland and so do you. I mean, good God.
It's so sexual.
Okay, so I now, it comes to the time where I have to score your work on three categories. Now, those categories are, first of all, originality. Now, I have never heard any story like Piano Propaganda. I've never heard it that descriptive of colours right off the bat. I mean, you've gone with production notes in, as your opening to a novel. And then there's just things in it that are insane. I mean, this character just needlessly has secrets in his eyes. That doesn't seem to come back round.
Never comes back. So, there are missing pages of this great work, which is sad.
Well, I mean, they're going to have to do a lot of heavy lifting if that's going to be relevant. But the fact that you also like had a publisher called Amy Books and you put a price in a barcode, all that sort of stuff. And then just talking about staves. Beaglewax is an original name for this uncle. He's wearing a helicopter hat. I haven't heard that described in literature. So I'm going to... And then, of course, the Candyland lyrics and the play about your cousin that you performed to your parents. It's got to be a 5 out of 5. I've not...
Holy...
I've not heard anything like it. So 5 out of 5. Category 2, the most crucial one of all, pure teen horniness.
Oh.
How can I possibly give you any score other than 5? I mean, this is ridiculous.
But it's pre-teen horniness, sadly.
I think you'll forgive me for not wanting to put a category called pre-teen horniness on my podcast. I mean, pure teen horniness is risky enough as it is without going, have you heard that podcast where he grades people on their pre-teen horniness? So pure teen horniness. If you hadn't told me if you'd just gone with the novel, I'd probably, this would be quite a low score. There's nothing horny in the novel, really. It's just, he gets blinded by some light. Nothing really happens that's horny. But the play with the cousin, Candyland, they're just very, very horny pieces of work. So just because the novel isn't, I'll go for 4 out of 5 for horniness. And then Mickey Mouse Club, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose score. How close is it to your work? Now, does it show the potential of a future star? Difficult to say. I mean, it's not... I suppose there's things that you do that I've seen you do on the various programs you're involved with where you're involved with some serious issues. That you're taking a light-hearted look at some serious issues.
Right.
Now, I would argue that there are serious issues in incest. There's serious issues in preteen horniness. And there's extremely serious issues in uncle-based kidnappings. But these are light-hearted looks, sideways looks at these topics. So yes, I do think it represents the potential of what you went on to become. So I will go for 4 out of 5 for that one. Wow. So that's a very strong score. That is 13 out of 15. I mean, that's one of the best, one of the greatest scores we've ever had. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now it comes to the time where I must read you something that I wrote. This is a poem because I know that your final piece is... kind of a religious poem. You sent it to me before. I haven't read it, but you told me what it was. So this is a poem I chose especially because this is sort of an anti-religious poem that I wrote when I was 16. It's called Evolution. If Eve is quite greatly my grandma, and Adam the male in the pair, if the temptress snake, a family pet, could prove that he were even there, if that tree with the apples was willow, and that fruit was forbidden or rare... If the Lord took 6 days of creation for each equal child to share. If the Bible were proven so sure. If footage and not just a page. If non-fiction, thus not to ignore. Then science would scrape little wage. There you go.
Whoa! I'm going to say off the bat, I'm very impressed.
Oh, thank you.
Very impressed.
I mean, the message is pretty obvious. If you could prove that Christianity is real, then... you wouldn't make any money for being a scientist. Well, what kind of point is that?
Well, the title Evolution straight off the bat is saying, I don't believe in
I refer to the snake as a temptress, and then the next line, it's a he.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, what am I saying? Am I saying there is no such thing as gender, or did I just forget?
Well, this is the thing with your early work, is like, is it a mistake or is it?
I think it's a mistake, to be honest.
I love it.
Thank you.
I think it's... I think you're a much more intelligent 16-year-old than I was, and really am at this
age. Sorry, but your work is from when you were 10, and it's more intelligent than any of this.
I remember being 16.
All right, it would all gone by then.
I never wrote anything like that.
What do you think? Originality-wise, what are we talking? A 16-year-old who doesn't believe in God, is that original?
I think it's very unoriginal. Yeah. I'm gonna say that. I think it's not original at all.
No.
But you're doing original things in it. I think you're trying to be original within an unoriginal topic. I'm seeing that. You're playing with our understanding of the story of Adam and Eve. And I'm going to accept that you knew the difference between genders.
Okay.
At the time. Or understanding of...
I think that's generous.
You knew the difference between... So I'm going to give you a 2.
Okay. 2 out of 5 originality. Very kind. What about pure teen horniness?
It's not... I think it's underlying, yeah.
Yeah? Where do you think...
I think Adam and Eve, they did it, didn't they?
I guess so.
Or did they? Or was she like fashioned from his rib? I'm not a religious woman. I'm going to give you a 1. It's not absent, but it's not prominent.
Yeah, sure. And Mickey Mouse Club, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose score, potential. What potential did it show for?
I think it shows a level of intelligence and trying to be... I think it shows the makings of a stand-up. It's not funny. It's not funny at all, but you couldn't be less
but
funny.
But nor's my act, so...
So, yeah, so fine. Yeah. No. But, like, you are very creative, aren't you? And you're always trying new stuff, and it's clever.
Yeah, I mean, I can't loudly agree with any of that.
I mean, it's not... I wouldn't be like, yeah, he's a stand-up, but I wouldn't be surprised that you were in the arts and you were, like, writing.
Okay.
I'm going to give it a 3, mate.
Okay.
Can't get higher than a 3, because, as I said, could not be less funny.
Yeah. Okay. I think it is supposed to be a joke. I think the ending...
Sorry.
No, but it's not funny.
Can you repeat the ending
It's not
me?
Funny, but the idea, like, if all of this was true, then science would scrape a little wage. So it's like, I think the joke is meant to be this really grand thing. So, like, if we could prove that religion was true, and then, you're meant to think it's going to be, then we'd all surely be happy and divine for the rest of our lives. But it's actually just like, oh, then if you're a scientist, you'd be fucked. I think is the 16-year-old's idea of comedy in that. So it's very brutal to hear that it couldn't be less funny.
Okay, I'm sorry. I see that there was the intention of a joke, but
still not funny.
We'll be honest. I'm not laughing. No. I'm not laughing.
I'm going to edit in your laughter to that.
3.5
No. 3 is fine. Three is absolutely fine. So 6. So I get 6 out of 15, and you get 13 out of 15. So you do win the episode. But of course, as always,
message.
Yeah, exactly. You made the teacher smile, but the message of the podcast is we're both losers. That couldn't be more clear in this episode, especially. Now it comes to the time for your final piece, the thing you're going to play us out with that we'll put production and music under for our big finale. What have you got?
Same school. I was 10 still. So this is my very creative period. There was a competition in a local... It was like a poetry writing competition. But it was one of those ones where everyone wins, but you didn't know that at the time. So you had to write a poem, and then they would be like vanity press printed. And so I wrote a poem, and my school was Church of England, so it was like Protestant, but no one was religious, so we had to like sing hymns in assembly. I mean, loads of people went to schools like this, and I think we occasionally learn about Christianity, but not, we also like sang all sorts of religious different religions hymns, I don't know, but I got it in my head that I had to write a religious poem to impress the teacher. So I think I just thought the teacher wanted me to write one, but I was not religious at all. Like, I just could not be... I couldn't believe it less. Like, I never for a single second ever believed in God or anything.
Maybe that's why you're so impressed by my piece of literature.
Maybe,
about how,
yeah.
God isn't even real. God sucks.
Because I was having less developed thoughts about that. So this is totally made up out of nowhere and trying to impress the teachers. And also, another thing about it is, I found it later when I was like a teenager, and I was so embarrassed by it that I like hid the book, and I was like, this is going to come out one day, and this is the most humiliating thing. And when you asked me to do the podcast, my first thought was, it cannot be my God poem. And then that's what I'm
and now
going
here we
out
are
on. So this is just pure suck up. Okay. God's key to heaven. Key to the door of heaven, God's key. Most important in the world, Key to Love and Happiness. Made by time to last eternity, look special amongst the others, carved by hand, holds memories, lives in a gold box made with scarlet velvet. Known to us as magic, known to the angels as friend, and known to God as mine. Amy Hogg, age 10, St. Stephen's Church of England Junior School.
Beautiful. Wow. What a message to go on. I mean, God will out. No matter what you write about evolution and Eve and Adam, we know that angels are friends with a key.
It doesn't make any sense.
Well, it looks better than other keys look, for a start.
Yep.
Other keys are fucking shit compared to this key.
Shit keys.
It's God's. This is God's key to heaven. It works. Heaven famously has a gate.
Yeah, but this key lives in a gold box. I don't know how often it's used. The gold box is made with scarlet velvet. And the key was carved by hand.
So descriptive. So descriptive. It's like you're handing it to a prop maker.
It was carved by hand, but made by time.
Oh, fuck. Fuck. My mind is blown.
To last eternity.
It was such a strange poem for someone not at all religious to write. This is the propaganda, not the piano stuff. This is where propaganda would have been an appropriate title. What you're writing here.
Yes. Oh.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. How do you feel?
I feel deeply ashamed. But fine, I also feel liberated.
Yeah, it's good to get it off your chest.
I've exposed myself, but everyone's gone, it's not that bad.
It's very much like what happened in your school play.
Oh, yeah. As soon as I said expose myself, I was like, there's something new about that.
There it was, Good Grief. God poetry written just to impress Jesus himself. A novel about the piano and a Dickensian Mr. Motivator uncle. Candyland sex metaphors and cousinly loving. The ridiculous childhood of goody two-shoes, revenge-obsessed, man-spreading, trousers-down egg Amy Hogger. So much to take in from that episode. What a fucking roller coaster. Check out her episode. It's personal if you have access to it. It's very funny. As ever, subscribe to this podcast. Tell your mum about it. Tell your dad about it. Tell your weird kidnapping uncle who wants to make you play piano in Barbados about it. If you want, give us a rating or a review if you fancy it on Apple Podcasts. And I will see you next time when, if we're lucky, the guest didn't maybe burn their school down. Dot, 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 dot. Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.